In this series of the essay, I've been exploring with the great Irish poet Michael Longley his six decades of poetry, some of which appears in a book of new selected poems called Ash Keys. Those of us who lived and worked in Belfast reporting on the Northern Ireland Troubles knew him as a poet who wrote with humanity and sensitivity about what the violence was doing to the people and the communities around him. We saw him as an urban poet, but some time ago he discovered a new hinterland in the west of Ireland. It's a wild place on the coast in County Mayo called Carrigskeewaun, where he stays in a cottage owned by the ornithologist David Cabot and his wife Penny. Carrigskeewaun is the Irish for the rock of the wall fern, and Longley's discovery of this place has been in every sense a gift.
I fell in love with this place the first time I saw it, the first time we turned the bend as you come down into Carrigskeewaun and saw this vast arena of sand and sand dunes and Macher or Duach, the sandy plain. And I fell in love with it then, and I manoeuvred myself into a kind of permanent invitation from David Cabot and his dear wife. And we've been going there every year since 1970. And we brought our children there, and they return of their own free will to this extraordinary, astonishing landscape. And they in turn have brought their children. So the place is blessed by the presence of our children and grandchildren. And every year I leave Carrigskeewaun thinking there can't possibly be any more poems about Carrigskeewaun. But every year they come to me, and it occurs to me that Carrigskeewaun is bottomless. And even after all those years, since 1970, I feel perhaps I'm still only scratching the surface.
Does it also extend your sense of Irishness, you being an Ulster man?
Yes, it does. It does. It encourages me to see the whole island as a whole, culturally, geologically, in whatever way you care to think about it. It's all of a piece.
Well, your delight in the place is almost childlike. Is that how your grandchildren feel about it? Are they delighted with it too?
Oh, yes. They don't stop moving the moment they get there.
Do you know what I loved hearing about it? You get cut off by the tide sometimes in that house, don't you?
Regularly. The important thing is not to try to drive your motor through it.
So you wade through it?
Yes, sometimes up to our navels.
I mean, what child wouldn't love that? So, listen, would you read us a poem which is a bit about the delight your family takes in the place, and it's called The Leveret.
Yes, The Leveret's dedicated to my first grandson, Benjamin. He was a babe in arms when I wrote this poem. This is your first night in Carrigskeewaun. The Owen or Donon is so full of rain. You arrived in Paddy Morrison's tractor. A bumpy approach in your father's arms to the cottage where, all of 1 year ago, you were conceived, a fire seed in the hearth. Did you hear the wind in the fluffy chimney? Do you hear the wind tonight, and the rain, and a shorebird calling from the mussel reefs? Tomorrow I'll introduce you to the sea, little hoplite. Have you been missing it? I'll park your chariot by the otter's rock and carry you over seaweed to the sea. There's a tufted duck on David's Lake with her suitful of hatchlings, pom-poms a day old and already learning to dive. We may meet the stoat near the erratic boulder, a shrew in his mouth, or the merlin meadow pipit hunting. But don't be afraid. The leveret breakfasts under the fuchsia every morning, and we shall be watching. I have picked wild flowers for you, scabious and centaury, in a jam jar of water that will bend and magnify the daylight. This is your first night in Corrigskeewaun.
For many poets, there's a place that brings them closer to poetry or allows them to write. And I know, for instance, for Seamus Heaney, the cottage that he used to go to down in County Wicklow was, for him, his house of poetry and of inspiration. Has Corrigskeewaun become that for you?
Yes, I've only to think of Corrigskeewaun, and I might be inspired to a poem. Corrigskeewaun has become a state of mind. And if I were prevented from going back there, I would still be going back there in my mind and in my imagination.
And you think of it all the time, even when you're back here in Belfast?
Yes. In fact, when I'm going to sleep sometimes, or I'm trying to get to sleep, I'll walk in my imagination around the townland of Corrigskeewaun.
Well, you've written a poem about that called Remembering Corrigskeewaun.
Well, yes, this is set in Belfast, this poem. This is me in Belfast remembering a magical day in Corrigskeewaun. A wintry night, the hearth inhales, and the chimney becomes a windpipe, fluffy with soot and thistledown. A voice box recalling animals. The leveret come of age, snipe at an angle. The porpoises, demonstration of meaningless smiles. Home is a hollow between the waves, a clump of nettles, feathery winds, and memory no longer than a day when the animals come back to me from the townland of Corrigskeewaun, from a page lit by the Milky Way.
There's a tradition in Irish poetry of the poet identifying with nature. It goes right back to the legend of Amargan, the Milesian poet said to be the founder of the Irish nation, who sang, "Am wind on sea, am wave swelling, am ocean's voice, am stag of seven clashes, am falcon on cliff." Not that there's any vague Celtic spirituality in Longley's nature poems. He's very particular. It's the minute detail with which he describes the plants and the creatures that he finds in Corrigskeewaun which show his admiration for them. But that sense of being at one with a bird or a flower, has that ever happened to him?
It has. I feel an electric charge going through me when I hear a wild bird singing, especially a curlew or a skylark, or see a little tiny white flower like the sandwort. It electrifies me, and I become as one, I feel, with that little flower or with the bird that's singing.
Aren't you very lucky to be feeling that excitement at your age?
Well, especially at my age, it gets more and more exciting, in fact.
Well, would you read us a poem called Stone Chat?
Stone Chat. A flicker on the highest twig, a breast that kindles the last of the fuchsia flowers and the October sunset still to come when we face the Carrignashinna shoal and all the islands in a golden backwash where sanderlings scurry. Two cormorants peeking at me and you over breakers that interrupt the glow. Behind us, a rainbow ascending out of Roon Keel, high above six noggins, disappearing between Mwealray's crests. And we return to the white cottage with its fuchsia hedge to share for a second time the stone chat's flirtatious tale and flinty scolding.
You celebrate nature, but do you not also feel all the time the threat that there is to it at present?
Well, I do. I feel that the world is at our mercy, and the number one political topic should be the future of the globe and our place in it.
Do you feel that particularly when you see your grandchildren in that wild place?
Well, yes, I think we're leaving our generations, leaving them a mess. And we're methodically converting all the beauty spots into eyesores. Looking at my grandchildren, I feel some hope because I think they're already alert to the crisis and they'll be more careful of the world and the beautiful creatures and plants in it than we have been.
And some of your poems reflect your own feelings, I suppose, about your own mortality. Is that a reflection of perhaps the threats to nature that you see around you too?
Well, my mortality is small cheese compared to the mortality of the globe.
But the two probably go together.
They do. And that's one of the things poetry can do, can bring those two things together.
Except when you go celebrating Carrig Skewan, you're in danger of dragging all those tourists to it.
Well, I hope the awkward tide will keep them away.
Would you read us a poem called The Comber, which of course describes a long rolling wave?
The Comber. A moment before the comber turns into a breaker, sea spray, raggedy rainbows, water and sunlight contain all the colours and suspend between Inishbofin and me, the otter. And thus we meet, without my scent in her nostrils, the uproar of my presence, my unforgivable shadow on the sand, even if this is the only sound I make.
There's a reverence about the way Michael Longley describes this wild place and its creatures, in the way he describes the otter tossing in the curl of the wave, or the hooper swans coming or going according to the season. The ornithologist David Cabot, who owns the Carrig Skewan house in which Michael and his wife Edna stay, says that the poet's knowledge of nature is remarkable and deep. In this last poem, Michael watches the birds and wonders if the birds are watching him. After 60 years together, he and Edna sit and wait for what's next.
Merlin. Is that a peregrine or kestrel quartering the townland? We sit above Corrigan and the dwindling lake and look towards Temple Dumor and the lost burial mound. Are we waiting to die, my love? What's happening behind us? Have our snowy heads been seen by the Merlin we cannot see?